If you have to get groceries, don't worry. The sales and the savings will still be. You're doing a test drive. Everything will stop what you're doing, because after 9 o'clock, Andy Udman is going to be in conversation in studio with David Carmichael. Andy, for anyone who is hearing the name David Carmichael and thinking, I know that name, I just can't place it. Help us place it.
I'm not sure there are very many Londoners who would remember the name, but I think most Londoners would remember the incredible and the shocking story of a murder in a hotel in South London about 10 years ago, 2004. What's shocking is that we have a guest in studio this morning who has committed a murder, killed another human being. Number two, that the victim was a child. And number three, that the victim was his own son. He strangled him at 3 o'clock in the morning, then turned on the TV and watched the TV for 6 hours, then called city police. He was arrested, charged with first-degree murder. The court held that David Carmichael did not commit a criminal act, but that he was under the influence of powerful antidepressant drugs. David Carmichael has now begun a crusade to make people aware of the power of antipsychotic drugs like Paxil, which he was on. And so he is in conjunction, and the timing is in conjunction with Bell's Let's Talk Day tomorrow. And so it's about the effect of these drugs on people who are suffering from depression. And he's going to be speaking at the public library in London next week. And to set up London for this visit to the library, he's going to be joining us in studio in a couple of moments. It's an incredible story. Incredible story. I mean, I've worked in a prison. I've been around people who've killed people. That part doesn't hit me as hard as the fact that someone who has actually killed his own son really was in a fog when he did it, and now is living with the grief of that. And you can imagine the agony that he's going through. But what's therapeutic for him is to now make people more aware of the power of antipsychotic drugs, if not used properly. In his case, he will be quick to admit that he was self-medicating, in the sense of the doctor prescribed it for him, then he went off the drug because he was feeling better, but then went back on and increased the dosage without consulting his doctor, and with disastrous results.
And you wonder how often that does take place. So this is the first hour of London Today. David Carmichael in studio with Andy Udman.
Here's Andy Udman.
I gave him the sleeping medication around 10:15 at night. It didn't put him to sleep, it actually caused him to hallucinate. I don't know why, but he started to hallucinate. And I killed him around 3 o'clock in the morning, just before 3 o'clock. I strangled him. You know, after he was dead, I moved him to the center of the bed, I kissed him on his lips, I told him I love him, I'm really going to miss you, but you're in a better place now. I went and I turned on the TV and I watched it for 6 hours. Not a tear.
You just switched on the TV, sat down and watched.
Yeah, until 9 o'clock in the morning when I called the local police, told them what I had done. And they came and, you know, charged me with first-degree murder.
The show is London Today. My name is Andy Udman, and right off the top, I'm going to warn you folks of what's to come. You need a warning, because this is high-octane material. I have a guest sitting right next to me in the studio whose story will absolutely shock you. We shook hands moments ago. It's the first time I've met David. David will look you right in the eye and say he killed another human being. He did it here in London. He did it in a hotel room in South London. And when I give you the details, if you lived in London in 2004, you will remember the case. What is more shocking than the fact that David is admitting to this murder, and I've worked in a prison where most killers do not admit to their crime. What is more shocking than the fact that he killed another human being is that the victim was a child, a defenseless child. And what is even more shocking than that is that the victim was, and you need to be ready for this, his own son. Question for you, Andy, what in the world are you doing with such a man in your studio? There is a lot more to the story, folks, and you need to hear this story. David Carmichael is coming to speak at the London Public Library, and you can meet him yourself in just a few days. His story is absolutely incredible. David, I want to tell you right off the top, I admire your courage for coming to share your story, and I urge our audience, as they sit on the edge of their seats to hear this story, to hear it out, because there are such compelling issues that we need to deal with. First of all, thanks for coming to London. You drove in this morning from your home in Oakville.
I did.
What were your thoughts as you drove down? Why am I doing this? Why am I going to talk to this radio talk show host about this unspeakable crime?
Well, there are really two thoughts. One of them is the public needs to better understand what people consider to be mental illness and how some of the drugs that people take can actually cause more harm than good. But my most difficult thought was coming into London and looking at the hotels, because I haven't been here since 2004.
You have not physically been in this city since you killed your son back in 2004.
Right. I haven't been in this city since I was transported to the Brockville Mental Health Center after a judge considered me not criminally responsible for killing my son Ian.
As you drove in this morning, and our studios are in Wellington Road South, you would have had to drive down the 401 right past the hotel.
I did.
Which hotel was it?
It was a Holiday Inn that I...
Which you can easily see from the 401. Let's get the tough stuff out of the way first, and then we'll talk about what your life has been like and why you're speaking to me, why you're going to be speaking at the library. Describe the events leading up to that tragic night in July of 2004.
I'll go back to 2003. I was suffering from what is diagnosed as a major depression in what they call a diagnostic statistical manual, and I was put on 40 milligrams of Paxil back in 2003. I had some really negative side effects, weight gain, excessive sweating, sexual dysfunction. I weaned myself off, not knowing any better. I read a book in a library, or actually a bookstore, that said I could do this. And about 4 months later, I had a relapse. When I was on the drug initially, I was probably would be considered manic. It really boosted me up. I was emotionally numb. I was able to carry a lot of work, and I was able to function at 8 different contracts, but when I was off the drug, I wasn't manic anymore, and I wound up having to juggle these contracts, sleep deprived, put myself back on 40 milligrams 4 months after I had taken myself off.
Did you consult with any doctor or medical professional when you decided to put yourself back on this drug?
I didn't, because when I first went to my doctor, he didn't tell me any side effects at all, and I had a full prescription. So what I did is I put myself back on. I started to suffer what they call akathisia. It's very much an irritation. You can't sleep. There's some insomnia. And it's actually the start to a state of delirium. And eventually I moved into psychotic episodes where I actually thought I was better off dead and I had suicidal thoughts. So I increased my dosage a week later from 40 to 60 milligrams and I became severely psychotic. My psychotic features got to the point where I was delusional in many different ways. I thought my son had permanent brain damage, and all this is false. And this is the toughest part. In that mindset, you don't realize it's false. Delusions are fixed false beliefs. I thought my son had permanent brain damage. I thought he was going to kill my daughter. I thought his life was living hell. I thought he was going to cause my wife to have a nervous breakdown. I thought he was going to hurt other children. And in that mindset, I thought the best thing for everybody was going to be for me to take my son's life. And that's what I did on July 31st, 2004.
Why in London? What brought you to London?
To me, London, it was a place that Ian always enjoyed. And as much as it's the most heinous violence, criminal offense there is, and this is going to be very hard for your listeners to really understand, to me, this was like our last supper. We had his favorite food that night. We watched his favorite movie. I gave him sleeping medication. Hopefully that would just take his life. It didn't. He hallucinated. I did wind up strangling him at 3 o'clock in the morning, as your opening clip explained. And it was a celebration for us. It was a place we had been to before in that hotel. In my mindset, this was an act of love. It wasn't an act of violence. It was planned, organized. I was very calm, relaxed. In that mindset, which is unbelievable for you to understand, including me right now, I have a very hard time going back there and even understanding how my mind could be so distorted. In that mindset, there was no question I was psychotic. It was diagnosed by two forensic psychiatrists, one that my lawyer recruited, the other one appointed by the Crown Attorney from London. I've seen 13 other psychiatrists since then. No question I was psychotic. The issue right now is,
what actually triggered that psychosis.
Let's talk about the moment for just a moment and get it out of the way. You had something you described as the Last Supper. You were planning to kill your son. You saw it as a favor to your family, your daughter and your wife. You were protecting them. Were you David Carmichael at that point, or were you somebody else?
Oh, I wasn't David Carmichael.
I mean, David Carmichael was a pretty high-profile person who worked for Participaction, was a national media spokesperson. People would recognize your face, recognize your voice. The media considered you the go-to guy on health and fitness issues. And here you are preparing to strangle your son in a hotel room in South London.
Well, 3 weeks before I killed Ian, I was directing a children's summer camp. I was juggling seven other contracts. I had finished developing communication marketing plans for organizations and working with provincial sport groups. Something happened in that 3 weeks that basically David Carmichael disappeared.
I don't want to dwell on the actual moment. You killed your son, and then you did something really, really strange. You turned on the TV. You watched TV for how long?
I watched TV for 6 hours in a very... I thought I had done everybody a favor. All I wanted to do in my mind was wait until 9 o'clock in the morning to call the day police so they wouldn't come rushing in with their guns open. And I called at 9 o'clock in the morning, and my 911 call was very calm, very relaxed. I even opened the door for the police. I came in. I gave them my prescription of an antidepressant called Paxil, the sleep medication. I took off my wedding ring. I had my bag packed. I knew I was going to be charged with first-degree murder. But it was part of my sacrifice for putting my son at the time that I thought was a better place.
6 hours later, did you still feel that way, looking at his body, seeing the police arrive, starting to understand the gravity of what you had done?
I felt that way until August the 15th. I was put into the London Middlesex Detention Center. I was on suicide watch for 13 days. There are real issues, and we'll get into the prescription drug issue, I'm sure, but for 2 weeks after I was off of all medication, I was still severely psychotic, and it was toxic psychosis. After 2 weeks of being off all medication, I started to come out of my psychosis, and I cried for 3 days. I could not believe where I was. I could not believe what I had done, and it took 3 days for me to really realize what had happened, and, you know, my son was gone.
Did you look in the mirror and say, I'm looking at a monster? Who kills their children? I'm looking at a monster. Did you have those thoughts?
I looked in the mirror and I was trying to understand what possibly could have happened. And sure, I beat myself up for a long time. And that's why when I decided to break my silence in 2006 and speak publicly to prevent tragedies like ours, and I've been asked the question, you know, are you afraid of what people are going to think? There's no comment. There's nobody that could beat me up the way I beat myself up for a long time.
And yet you seem shocked when I shared with you a few moments ago that one of my producers had asked me if it was safe for me to be in the studio with you this morning.
Surprised, you know, still to this day, people don't understand what can happen with these drugs. And, you know, the Paxil piece is a huge play here. And for me to be out and free, obviously somebody has decided that I was not criminally responsible. I've been through the review board. I'm not a harm to myself. I'm not a harm to others. I'm reconciled with my wife and daughter. We're trying to make our life work again as much as possible. And this is a daughter who at 14 years of age opened the door for the Toronto police. You know, and now she's finishing a degree, you know, at Nipissing University.
Does she feel entirely comfortable with you now?
Absolutely.
She has no concerns about her safety?
No concerns. But, you know, because she spent time becoming educated about the David Carmichael then that wasn't really the David Carmichael as you described.
If someone asked her, who killed your brother, what would she say?
She would say my dad. You know, she hasn't gotten to the point to recognize that it wasn't really me. You know, physically, it was me. It's a very hard thing for people to get their head around. But the mind was not there.
I just shook your hand a few moments ago. I just shook the hand that helped kill an 11-year-old boy. I'm past that because I'm sitting here with you, and I feel entirely comfortable with you. Where our audience is at, I don't know. I will open the phone lines up later. You're coming to London to speak. in a few days. I want to talk about that when we come back. In just a moment, David Carmichael, who killed his own 11-year-old son in a hotel in South London. Back with more in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK.
News Talk.
I gave him the sleeping medication around 10:15 at night. It didn't put him to sleep, it actually caused him to hallucinate. I don't know why, but he started to hallucinate. And I killed him around 3 o'clock in the morning, just before 3 o'clock. I strangled him.
It happened in a hotel in South London. David Carmichael killed his own 11-year-old son. He's in studio with me this morning. And before you have any illusions about him having escaped from prison, I'm sure you're thinking, well, why didn't they send him to Kingston for life? Let's look at the legalities, David Carmichael. After you were arrested by London City Police, after you called them, after watching TV for 6 hours, after strangling your 11-year-old son, they came and arrested you. Can't imagine the officer's reaction. Did they look at you like you'd lost your mind?
Yeah, I was surprised at the reaction. They were actually very calm. I told them where Ian was. They didn't say very much to me, and it was a woman officer. And I gave her a list of all the phone numbers that I pulled out of my memory because my mind was functioning at a very high level. In fact, testing done when I was in jail showed my IQ was higher than normal, my concentration was higher than normal, my mind was really wired high. And I rang off probably 10 or 12 phone numbers and my memory, so she could call to get support around my wife. Because I knew as much as I thought my wife would understand why I did this, I just wanted to make sure she had support because she'd still be surprised.
Your wife would not have one clue of any of this?
None of this. No, when I was severely psychotic, she had no idea that my mind was functioning like this. But I also didn't feel compelled to explain it. I thought she would understand it.
Wow, that was part of the psychosis. You thought that she would understand that you did this as a favor of your family to protect them from this threat.
Oh, absolutely. The first visitor that came to see me in jail is my former boss at Participation. And the first thing he said to me, which actually upset me, the whole thing, I was still severely psychotic. She said, you know, your wife will never forgive you. And that set me back when I was severely psychotic. I thought she'd be happy that I did this. It's best for everybody.
Let's just look at the legalities a moment so people know that you're here. There's no police car outside. There's no sheriffs, no deputies, no security. You are a, quote, free man.
I'm a free man. I've got an absolute discharge in December 2009 from the Ontario Review Board.
You are involved in some legal issues right now involving the drug company that produces Paxil.
I am. In October 2009... I had my DNA tested from Australia. No one does it in Canada. And there are certain people that should never be on these types of drugs called selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, or SSRIs. And I happen to be one of them. I don't metabolize the drug properly. So based on that DNA evidence, I had a 2-year statute of limitations. And then I filed a lawsuit against GlaxoSmithKline in October 2011.
Is it in progress right now?
It is in progress right now. It was filed up in the court up in Bracebridge, Ontario.
The value of your claim?
It's a $22 million lawsuit.
What are you alleging?
Well, the drug company have known about these side effects for more than 2 decades. They have known that these drugs can cause people to kill themselves or other people. And that was not public knowledge until 2004.
If, when you went back on the medication and you self-medicated, but you were thinking, I'm just using a drug that was prescribed to me, but you did increase the dosage. If you had gone to your doctor and told him, her, what you were doing, were there warnings at the time that you shouldn't do that?
Now, in May 2004, and everything happened in July 2004, it was the first warning where Health Canada made GlaxoSmithKline sent out a warning saying that for all ages, their drug could cause people to harm themselves or others. And then Health Canada a month later came up with the same warning. Now, the warnings are just sent to healthcare professionals, and most of them are not even read. So my doctor had no idea. In fact, my family doctor, when I was diagnosed with psychosis, didn't even know what it was. I mean, there are doctors out there, just people want a quick fix. Get diagnosed, take a pill. And that's, so I don't think my doctor had any idea.
You have come to London. You're going to speak at the library in a couple of weeks. What is this crusade? And it's become a crusade for you. Can you now give me your new mission statement in life?
Well, my crusade when I broke my silence in 2006 was to prevent tragedies like ours, because they are preventable. You know, usually anything that happens with these drugs happens within the first 3 to 4 weeks. When you start the drug, increase your dosage, decrease your dosage, or stop the drug.
We have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask you this question. And just give me a yes or no now, and then you get the longer answer on the other side. Paxil is a pretty popular drug. GlaxoSmithKline is a huge drug company. Are there any other moms or dads who are walking the journey of having taken this drug and killed their own children?
Maybe not Paxil, but SSRIs. Yes, there is, and there's actually a successful judgment in Texas a few years ago.
Well, it's all about educating everyone out there about this powerful drug and other drugs. David Carmichael is our guest. If you have just joined us, David Carmichael strangled his own 11-year-old son in a hotel room in South London, has not been back to London since, is sharing his story in our studio this morning. When we come back on the other side of the news update, we're going to talk about this drug and what David wants to warn people about. We'll be back in just a moment here on London Today on News Talk 1290 CJBK. 9:36 now on this Monday, the 11th day of February. If you have just joined us, I need to do something that I did in the last half hour, and that is warn you about the... it doesn't cover it to say adult subject material. It gives you the wrong impression. It is emotionally, psychologically, can be overpowering for some people. We are talking about David Carmichael, who killed another human being. He's sitting in studio with me. What's more shocking, the victim was a child. And what's even more shocking is the victim was his own son, 11 years old. He's been brave enough to share his story. And in the next half hour, we want to talk about the message that he's going to bring to the London Public Library in just a few days. And we'll tell you all about the dates and the place and so on. But I want to share with you a clip of David on W5 shared several years ago, in which he described that horrible night at the Holiday Inn in South London in which he killed his 11-year-old son.
David Carmichael, a loving father with no history of violence but suffering from psychotic delusions, murders his 11-year-old son Ian, puts his hands around his neck, and strangles him to death.
What was going through your own mind in those 20 or 30 seconds?
That I was doing the right thing. After Ian was dead, moved him to the center of the bed, I kissed him on his lips, I told him I love him, I'm really going to miss you, but you're in a better place now. I went and I turned on the TV and I watched it for 6 hours. Not a tear.
You just switched on the TV, sat down and watched?
Yeah, until 9 o'clock in the morning when I called the local police, told them what I had done. And they came and, you know, charged me with first degree murder.
I want to bring someone else into the conversation. Pam Colleen has been warning us about... the powerful negative side effects of antipsychotic drugs for years. And she has arranged for David to come to town. So I want to say good morning this morning to Pam Colleen. Good morning, Pam.
Andy, how are you today?
I'm good, and I'm delighted that you joined us. I want to give you full credit for helping to set up this interview with David. Tell us why you're bringing David to London, Pam.
Well, one of the reasons for this is because people really don't know about the damaging, devastating, fatal side effects of a lot of the psychiatric medications that they could be taking out there. We've had, Andy, a couple of times on the show, Dr. David Healy, who wrote the book Pharmageddon. And as a psychiatrist, he's very, very concerned about the overuse of a lot of the psychiatric medication on the market today. He's not against the use of psychiatric medication. He just thinks we're crossing a line in the sand and saying that, you know, first of all, people are not being warned of the potential side effects of the drugs. And in many cases, they're being prescribed to people who really don't need them in the first place.
Now, some may think, well, okay, so one in a million has this happened to them. David, I want to ask you, we were talking during the break and just before the break. Paxil is a very common drug, of course, antipsychotic drug. Are there other David Carmichaels out there, other fathers, mothers who have taken the drug to deal with their depression and who have, in the end, killed one or more of their children? Is there such a person out there?
There are hundreds of examples of people that have been violent on the drugs, and there's many people in the U.S. particularly who are in prison right now because of it.
Just like you?
Just like me.
Have you corresponded or in any way communicated with any of them?
I have. I was in North Carolina in October, and I presented with the wife of an individual named David Crespi, who killed his twin daughters after being on Prozac for 7 days. He was also on a sleep medication, and he decided to plead guilty to get the death penalty taken off the table, and we're trying to get him a new trial. David Crespi's circumstance, very similar to my own. Senior VP of a bank, money was not a problem. He thought he was having financial problems. His wife's lived off their money since 2006.
Are you encouraged by the work of the likes of Pam Killeen, who are ringing the alarm bells about the devastating potential side effects of some of these antipsychotic drugs?
I'm encouraged by the people that have had the courage to speak out, and it allows me to feel like there's a bit of support out there. I'm not working for David Healy, an organization called RISK.org. It's RXISK.org, where we have all the side effects of all the drugs, and we're not talking psychiatric drugs. You know, Pam, you're right with the psychiatric drugs, but there are other drugs that in the compendium of pharmaceuticals and specialties in the monographs actually can trigger psychotic episodes. Acne drugs, ADHD drugs. We're talking about an epidemic of people that are losing their minds literally because of the toxicity of these drugs. And my work with David Healy right now is in media relations and public relations. And we're trying to make sure people not only learn the side effects, but report their own side effects to the database at RISK.org.
Now, David, you just did the panel in Toronto at the Art Gallery of Ontario with Dr. David Healy, Terrence Young, the MP from Oakville, who wrote the book Death by Prescription, and another gentleman who wrote about his experience as a patient in the medical system here in Ontario. What was the turnout like for this panel discussion? What happened that evening?
Well, we had 200 people there, and my role was I was emceeing the event. And we had three speakers, Terrence Young, whose daughter died of a heartburn drug in front of him. What people don't realize, adverse drug reactions, just the hospital cases alone, is the fourth leading cause of death in this country. People have no idea. You add that to the community deaths. People think their loved ones are dying from the illnesses and the diseases. A lot of the time it's the drug or the combination of drugs. So with RISK.org and with Terrence Young, and that's David Healy, and then with Shalom Gluberman, who is the president of the Patients Association of Canada, we are really working hard at medication education.
Pam has been saying these things for years, and I know that she gets a lot of, I wouldn't call it hate mail, but just a lot of flack from people who think she's crazy. Maybe she's been on the drugs themselves, but let me ask you, if you see signs that the whole paradigm of thinking about the potential devastating side effects of some of these drugs, is there a new awareness that is starting to happen, such as you being invited to London, Ontario, to speak at the public library?
I think we're getting to a turning point. I think people are realizing that the quick fix may not be the best answer. They need to get healthy. They need to look at their lifestyle. Pam is amazing around the nutrition side. I'm coming full circle. I'm advocating physical activity and sport. Sport groups should be your support group. You know, if you talked about, you know, Bell Let's Talk Day tomorrow. What's going to happen? People are going to realize, let's talk about it. Let's go to the doctor. And you know what they're going to get? Treatment equals drugs. And that is not the answer. The answer is to take a look at your life and to change your lifestyle and to try to get healthy.
And this is a big concern given what's happening tomorrow with Bell, because Bell's having the Let's Talk Mental Illness Day tomorrow. And a lot of what they're suggesting in this crusade of theirs is to guide people towards psychiatric medication. They're not really looking to the root cause of the problem.
Let me ask you, what is the root cause? David first and then Pam.
Well, the root cause is really lifestyle and stress. And for me, in 2003, I had what would have been called a nervous breakdown. But with the DSM, the Diagnostic Statistical Manual, there's 287 disorders, and DSM-5 is coming out in May. And they're taking things like grief. Okay, if you've been lost a loved one and you've been grieving for a while, it was for just 2 weeks, and I think they're extending that now. For just 2 weeks, if you're actually still in grief, they're trying to diagnose that as major depressive disorder. And as a result, they want you on a prescription drug. The people who are driving DSM-5 with a psychiatrist, most of them have relationships with drug companies. So the answer is to take a good look at your life. Sure, you've got to talk about your issues. You need to vent. You need support. You need loved ones to care. But it's only been in the last couple of decades that we've just seen this overprescribing of medication to deal with what are pretty common issues that people deal with in life. They're trying to take normal behavior and diagnose it And that's being driven by Big Pharma.
I want to ask both of you the same question. There are people listening right now who are literally hanging onto the side of the table. They have someone in their family who's suffering from depression. They know they're taking drugs. What are you saying to them about that situation? Should they be alarmed? Should they panic? Should they immediately call them and say, you wouldn't believe what David just said? I want to ask David the question first and then Pam. David, go ahead.
The riskiest time on antidepressants, and again, I like with David Healy, I talk about the drugs, not against the drugs, is the first few weeks when you either increase your dosage, you know, when you start the drug, increase your dosage, decrease your dosage, or you stop. For a lot of people, they've been on medication for years. What also happens with the medication is once you're on one, you get a side effect, they give you another. So there are many people on multiple medications, and there's been no studies done about how they interact with each other. So I would say for most people, they should take a very close look at what they're taking and see if there's an alternative way.
Pam, let me ask you the same question.
Well, first of all, let's talk about how pervasive this problem is. If you look at depression alone, it's the leading cause of disability here in North America. So it's costing society billions of dollars every year. And very little is being said about the root cause of the problem, because depression is something very new to humankind. It's not something that was there sort of, you know, before modern civilization hit. It corresponds with what's going on today in modern civilization. And so what we need to do is determine what is it that keeps us mentally, emotionally strong, and look at the diet that we've been following over the last 100 years and see how it's so heavily degraded over the last century, and how that contributes to not just our physical decline in terms of the rise in chronic disease, but also the rise in mental illness. And so I think that's really getting to the core issue. So companies, corporations, governments really should be saying, you know, this is an illness that is crippling society. It's obviously causing a huge burden in terms of the cost for all the entities I just mentioned. And I think that they need to start exploring the diet and lifestyle of the individuals who are collapsing with things like depression, fatigue, anxiety, OCD, etc.
Okay. And David, would you, Pam is focusing more on the nutrition. Would you focus on, well, where would you, the starting point be for you?
The focus has to be on healthy living, which includes, if you look at it and you break it down, a lot of it is fundamentally eating healthy and regular exercise. So my focus is more on the physical activity piece. I know for me right now, I've been off all medication for 2.5 years and I'm exercising regularly. I have one really intensive workout a week.
So you're off all medication?
Oh, I've been off it for 2.5 years.
Okay. Let me be honest now. When my producer said, is it safe for you, Andy, to be in the studio with this guy? He killed his own kid. I mean, how do you react to that?
I'm not surprised, because people don't understand this. Pharmaceutical companies control the messaging. Bottom line. They've got the money to do it.
I watch the evening news, the network news out of the U.S., and it seems like every second commercial is about drugs, and the first half is about how wonderful they are, and the second half is about all the terrible side effects.
Well, and that was a surprise to me. When I was in North Carolina, and I presented with Kim Crespi, we had the five major networks there. So we had ABC, NBC, CBS, Fox, and CNN. They were all there. The only station that did not mention the name of the drugs was ABC. The others talked about Prozac and Paxil. They actually focused on medication education. And in North Carolina, much to my surprise, I was a little surprised today with the reaction from your producer, but I was shocked. I was not treated like a perpetrator in the U.S. People are starting to get it.
Okay, we have to take a short break. When we come back, I want to ask Pam Colleen about the event, about where it is, how you can plug into this. And yes, we're going to take a few phone calls, because I know that you would like to call David, 643-1290. I've just had a discussion with David about his return visit to London next week, and he has agreed to join us with Pam Colleen for that full hour on the day that he is speaking at the library. So if you don't get through today, I'm just wondering if you have something to say to David and to Pam for their courage, especially David's courage in stepping forward and saying, hey, I killed my son. Here's why. You need to know why, because the next tragedy could be in your family. 643-1290, back with more in just a moment, right here on London Today on News Talk 1290, CJBK. And already the phone lines are lighting up after this incredible, incredible story that David Carmichael is telling about literally strangling his own 11-year-old son in a hotel room in South London. I thought we would take a couple of calls. We don't have time for all. I mean, we could go 2 hours on this. But Debbie, you have some thoughts. Go ahead and share them with David.
Yes, I like to say that I'm on his side, and these pills should not be on the market. And it's because what happened with me was back in 2000 and 2005, I was on it, and I lost custody of my kids and that. And also, too, is I can't drive right now because I was driving with no insurance. They only did it twice.
Do you have your kids back, Debbie?
Yes, I have my kids back, yes. But it's just they're older now and that kind of stuff, and the age came into things, so they're all in their 20s.
Are you going to go and hear David speak at the London Public Library next week?
Oh, you betcha. And I'd like to be on his crusade against the drugs because...
What do you say to him? We have to move on, but what do you say to him about his courage to step forward?
Oh, I bless you, because I want to be on your side. I want to sue the company, too, because it is... garbage. I've got ADHD, and I was put on because of that.
Wow, Deb, we have to leave it there.
Thank you, Debbie.
Okay, let's go to Reg. Reg, go ahead.
Good morning, Andy. I wasn't going to call in. I don't mean to sound cruel and unkind. Somebody made the remark, people are starting to get it. Andy, I do not get it. And I'm speaking from personal experience, okay? I just don't get it. As far as I'm concerned, Andy, Mr. Carmichael should spend the rest of his life in some kind of an institution. I'm sorry, but those are my feelings.
Reg, I appreciate you being honest. I'm going to give David a chance to respond to that, because there are people out there who feel that way, David.
You know, I've been have people feel that I got away with murder. And, you know, my response to that is quite simple. GlaxoSmithKline got away with murder, and they're still getting away with murder.
Wow, that's a great response.
As well, Andy, with the fact that a lot of people think that these moods that we're in today, these bad moods, are normal, and they're not normal. There's something very new going on in society, and we need to get to the core of the problem.
Wow, what a great response. GlaxoSmithKline got away with murder. Richard, your thoughts this morning.
Good morning, Andy. I just want to say to David Carmichael, I'm certainly not calling in right to judge right or condemn what he did, even though I don't understand it. But anyways, right, I certainly hope right that things work out for him in the future. But when it comes to the murder of a child, Andy, right, I just can't wrap my head around it. There has only been one murder of a child in this country, right, that I'm not saying I agreed with or I disagreed with, but I could at least understand, and that was the farmer from Wilkie. At least I could understand what he did, right?
Richard, I appreciate it. We're going to move quickly here. Bobby, your thoughts?
Oh, hi. Good morning, Andy. I just wanted to know that, say that to David, it takes a lot of courage to do what he's doing, to speak up, and I really honor him for doing this. And I think that a lot of these major shootings, like the one in Newtown, I would like to know what that Adam Lenza was on, because I doubt he would have ever killed all those 26 people if he had not been on some drugs from a doctor, and they should be sued for what they're doing. There was a lawsuit for Paxil maker, manufacturers of Paxil, SmithKline, Beecham. They were ordered to pay relatives of Donald Schnell $8 million in wrongful death suit.
Quick comment, your comment about David's courage in stepping forward.
Oh, I think it's absolutely wonderful what he's doing, and I really give him all my support, and it takes a lot of courage to do what he's done.
Absolutely. Bobby, I want to ask David, has your daughter and has your wife forgiven you, or is that even the proper term?
No, they have. You know, they have. We're working hard to try to rebuild our lives. And, you know, and I just want to make a comment on one of your last callers. I don't understand this. You know, I really don't. I have to count on Dr. Healy, and I've got to deal with other people to try to understand how this could have happened myself. So I understand the confusion out there. I absolutely understand it, because I can't understand that my mind could be so broken back in July 2004.
And keep in mind as well that what David is doing is basically hoping to prevent deaths in the future from similar incidences. According to Dr. David Healy, over 90% of these school shootings that we're hearing about in the media have some sort of involvement with the individual taking some sort of psychiatric medication. So we're trying to be preventative here. This is the ultimate goal.
Okay, now I want to ask David a question about Pam and the crusade that she's been on for years, saying exactly what you're saying. And she has her own health experiences, but your comment about Pam's work.
Well, it's nice to meet people who have got the courage to speak out, and I guess I wish I would have listened to Pam. I don't know how long you've been speaking about this, Pam, but if it's been more than a decade, I wish I'd have learned something from you back before I self-medicated and put myself back on a drug that I thought was safe. I took like an aspirin. I thought a little more within the recommended limit would be fine, and obviously the tragic consequences.
Okay, we have just a couple of moments left. Pam Killeen, David's coming back. He's agreed to join you and me for a full hour, and we'll take a lot of calls. Give us the date of his visit to your event at the London Public Library.
Right. David is coming in on Thursday, February the 21st. So I take it we'll be in studio with you, Andy, around 10 o'clock that day.
That's right.
And then at 7 o'clock that night at the Central Library at Stevenson Hunt B, David is going to do a full presentation on this issue, and he's going to be taking questions from the audience as well.
Okay. Now, I want to come back to David. There are some people who've heard this. They have family members who are on depression. They're saying, I don't know if I can get through to that date. I don't know if the circumstances are going to be the same. Something could happen between now and then. What do you say to them?
I think they've got to talk to their doctor, and they've got to better understand the drugs that they're on if their family members are on drugs. And go to risk.org, R-X-I-S-K.org. You can find out all you need to know about any one of these drugs. It's actually the most comprehensive database of drug side effects in the world.
Wow. Pam, thank you so much for joining us this morning, and all the best with your event at the public library, and bravo to you for alerting us about all of this, as you have for years. Thanks, Pam.
Thanks, Andy. Thanks, David.
Nice talking with you, Pam.
Okay, so, David, my friend, I already feel like you're my friend. Isn't that something? And I'm holding the hand. I'm holding the hand. Let me just leave it there. And David has a heart that is as big as Texas, and he's coming back to London. You heard the dates, February the 21st. He'll speak at the London Public Library. You can talk to him yourself, and what an incredible story he has. 10 o'clock news coming up next.